In 1901, a woman by the name of Annie Taylor climbed into a barrel so that she could ride that barrel over Niagara Falls, the first person to do so. The reason for her crazy endeavor? She was struggling to make ends meet, and she was hoping for fame and financial security. It's Ryan from United Faith Mortgage, a faith and family mortgage team that tries to improve your financial outlook without having to ship you over a 170-foot waterfall. Our mortgage team happens to be an arm of a bigger company who is a direct lender, which means our company gets to use its own money and make its own decisions within its own walls. There's no middleman. This advantage often allows us to get you a better rate, which can save you monthly and lifelong money through a refinance, or help you with a cash-out refinance, cashing out some of your home's equity to use for life. We are United Faith Mortgage.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp., 25 Melville Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Corporate NMLS number 1330. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Utah.
It's great to have you with us here on Mornings with Tom and Tobby. Joni DeBrito is our guest right now. She's going to help you help your kids with their mental health. And Joni, thank you again for being here with us. This is a topic that is really bubbled to the surface over the last few years, but it's something that's so relevant. We need to know how to point our kids towards good mental health. Thanks for being here with us this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, Joni, an Institute for Family Studies report showed the most important mental health factor among adolescents is the quality of relationships with their parents. Tell us about that.
Is that surprising or what?
Yeah.
It really is true that parent-child relationship is really important. So, you know, parents are in the best position to be able to get to know their children if they take that time and they're intentional about listening to them, having conversations, etc., so that as they get to know them, they know what's normal for them. They know their personality, they know what makes them happy, what makes them sad, etc., so that as they get older, if they start to show any signs of mental health concerns, they're more likely to be able to recognize because they notice, gosh, they're eating more or less than usual, or they're sleeping more or less than usual, or the previously very outgoing child is now being very isolating, and especially if they're isolating with devices and so forth. And so they can recognize those patterns a lot sooner. And then also, if they've taken the time to develop a good relationship with them, their kids are more likely to open up to them and talk a little bit more honestly about what's going on in their lives.
Okay, thank you so much for that. You're hearing the voice of Dr. Joni DeBrito with Focus on the Family. And Joni, let me ask you this. As you started talking about that the relationship between the child and the parent is really important. As a parent now, I'm thinking, yeah, absolutely, it's so important. But kids are kind of railing against that relationship. And unfortunately, culture is kind of pushing that agenda that your parents don't know what they're talking about. Don't listen to them. Only we know what you're talking about. How do you combat that as a parent to make sure that you stay in your kid's life?
Well, part of it is you have to understand that it's a bit of a rite of passage to be able to say, oh, my parents don't know what they're talking about. But I will tell you that in times of difficulty and crisis, kids will tend to turn to the people that they have the most trusting relationships with. So even it's actually kind of a good sign when they're rebelling a little bit against their parents, because that's normal. They're trying to press into their peers more. But I can tell you, as someone who's worked with many, many families with kids in crisis, that when those solid relationships have been there, kids will really lean into their parents and recognize that they are a great support to them and maybe the best support that they have.
Oh, that is good news. Thank you so much, Joni. And let me ask you this, because, you know, as a parent, again, looking at it through those lens, we can see when they're little, they've got a scrape, or they scraped up a knee, they fell. We can see what happened externally. But internally, sometimes when things are starting to happen, we don't necessarily recognize that. How can we do that to recognize what's going on inside and help them cope with whatever it is that's coming down the pike towards them?
So that goes back to the idea of having ongoing conversations with them, that they're much more likely to talk with you if you've been talking to them all along, not just when they're in crisis. So take those opportunities in the car, turn off the music and say, hey, how's this going? How's that going? Ask open-ended questions. Tell me about, or make comments. Hey, I noticed this and I'm wondering, it used to be that you used to hang out with so-and-so for a while. What happened to that? What happened to that friendship? And that can open things up for them. The other thing to remember, though, is that it takes a lot of support to raise kids. And there are other people in their lives that might be influential, maybe other kids' parents that you know and trust, maybe pastors, youth pastors, teachers, coaches, etc. So also talk with them and say, hey, I've noticed this in my child. Are you noticing this at all? Have you noticed anything that you're concerned about? And what's really interesting is if there's really something going on, usually several people will say, you know, I did notice this a little bit, that there was something that was a little bit different about him or her, and I was going to talk to you about it, but I just wasn't sure if I should say anything. So it's good to ask and find out if other people might be seeing some of the same things.
I love that, because it takes a village to raise a child, right? And we need those villages and open, be open to other people being able to see and to speak into your child's life and to help you connect. And I was remembering this when I was younger. I remember my parents actually sharing a little bit about their lives or their feelings and then asking me. And that seemed to spur me to want to get a chance to share my story. What do you think about that?
I think it's such a great idea, Tabby, just with this one caveat that it's better to share general themes as opposed to a lot of details. Sometimes the details can come back to bite you.
Okay, that's good to know.
Sharing the themes. I struggled with bullying, or I struggled with friends, or I struggled with this or that, and this is how I got through it. Kids will often put their parents on pedestals and think that they're so perfect and they never did anything wrong. And it's so fun to talk with them when they mention something. And I have seen, even talking to my grandchildren, their eyes just light up and they'll say, you, Nana, you did that? And I'll say, sure, I was a kid once too. And when your kids, well, adults as well, we make mistakes throughout our lives, but part of childhood is making mistakes and learning from them and so forth. So sharing is a really good idea. Again, I would just probably be careful about sharing too many details.
Joni DeBrito is with us. She is a licensed family therapist with Focus on the Family, specializing in youth and young adult mental health. And she's talking about helping your kids with their mental health. And surprisingly, that relationship with you is of utmost importance. And so we want to keep those communication lines open and find ways to stay connected. Sometimes great results happen with those conversations.
Yeah, Joni, thank you so much for being here with us on Mornings with Tom and Tommy. Can I ask you if there's like a strategy or something for parents or grandparents so that we can intentionally maybe build some emotional resilience in our kids and in our grandkids? Because it seems like kids these days, I don't mean to sound disparaging, but they're wiltier than they were when we were kids. I mean, how do you actually build some emotional strength into our kids?
Well, first of all, we have to be willing to let them fail. And that goes all the way back to when they're little toddlers and they're starting to walk. Let them fall over on their noses. Obviously not bump their head against a hard table or what have you, but that's how we learn to walk, right? We fall over, we get back up, and parents and other people are there to cheer them on and help them get to the point where they are stable on their feet. And it's the same thing in life. If you do not allow your kids to fail, they never have the opportunity to learn how to recover from that failure. And I think most of us would agree that we learn more from our failures than we do from our successes. You say, okay, I don't want to be in this place again. This doesn't feel so good. What do I need to do to make things different? And the younger we are, the more people we have cheering us on. But as we get older, we have to develop that internal sense of control and sense of being that we're able to say, okay, this is what I need to do. I don't want to make this mistake again. This is what I need to do. So we need to allow our kids to fail and not try to rescue them out of things. And we need to be asking them questions when they do fail instead of berating them or shaming them if they do something that isn't the best idea, to say, okay, so how did that work for you? Did that work well? Was the outcome what you wanted? No, it's not really. Okay, does it feel good to be here? No, I don't like this. Okay, so how could you do this differently? Or how could you avoid being in this situation in the future? And I totally agree with you, Tom, that there is a culture right now of too much hand-holding and making kids weak, probably unintentionally, but way too much rescuing, way too much doing things for children, way too much of making excuses for their poor behavior. Let them feel the consequences of poor behavior. Let them maybe have some difficulty with friends before you run off and try to talk to a parent and ask the parent why their child is being so mean or what have you. Let them feel some of that. And what you'll probably find out, especially if it's a relational issue, is that there are issues on both sides. It's both your child and the other child interacting with each other, and neither one of them are experts at this. That's why they need parents and grandparents and other people. So I would also say just really try to take these words out of your vocabulary, not my kid. I hear that a lot when I'm teaching parenting classes. Oh, my kid would never do that. My kid would never lie. My kid never does this, and so forth. And I think that's not helpful. We need to be able to recognize when our kids are making mistakes, hold them accountable for their behavior in a very gentle way, let them feel the consequences, and then help them figure out how to move on.
Okay, Joni, when are you going to be leading your symposium on parenting? Because this is just, these are basic things, but in our desire to help our kids, we step over that boundary over and over again. Yep. Instead of allowing our kids to truly grow strong. We want them to be strong, but we also don't want them to fail. And they go hand in hand, is what I'm hearing you say.
They do. And, you know, one really good example of this that I saw working on a college campus and actually learned after my own children were in high school was the number of parents who were going to school administrators and demanding that their teachers change grades that their children had earned. They earned a C, and the parents would go to the administrators, and this is not an uncommon thing. Or they go to the professor and complain and say, my child has been a student up until this year, so you have to change this B to an A, or you have to change the C to a B. And the professor says, well, actually, your child earned a C. I don't care. You need to change it. That's really concerning, because what it really teaches a child or an emerging adult is someone's going to be there to fix everything for you, and you don't really have to be responsible for your behavior because someone will fix that. It's a problem. And I saw it a lot on the college campus where I ran a college counseling center, and I also heard a lot of those reports after my kids graduated from high school. There were parents that would tell me, actually friends of mine, and I was very surprised. They'd say, oh, yeah, I just went over to school and told them they needed to change that grade. That's not a good practice, folks. Not a good one.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need people who are growing up to take responsibility. Can you give us just a couple of best practices as we communicate with children and youth about emotions from a Christian perspective? Because I think sometimes parents will lean into, you need to do this, and don't do that, without having that conversation to help that child actually grab hold of those truths for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, we need to allow kids to feel the emotions that they have. And obviously, as they get older, they need to have control over how they express those emotions, but we don't want to shame them for having normal human emotions. So it's okay for them to feel sad. It's okay for them to feel mad. It's okay for them to feel a variety of emotions, as well as happy and joyful and grateful and so forth. The issue is how they express their emotions, and what we're hoping to help kids do as they get older is get more and more control over their emotions. So if you're in a shopping mall and there's a two-year-old throwing a tantrum, most of us would say, okay, that's normal for a two-year-old, and you're beginning then to help that child learn how to manage the emotions so the temper tantrums decrease. Now, if you're in a high school or a college and there's an 18 or 19-year-old throwing a temper tantrum, we would probably all agree that that's inappropriate behavior. So as kids are growing, we're trying to help them understand it's okay to have all of those different feelings, but you have to begin to learn how to control them and how to have that internal sense of control over the way you express your emotion.